It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, and Mostly Motorsports is brought to you by Lucas Oil Products, made in America, sold to the world. Welcome back to our daily show, folks. We hope that you're enjoying what we're doing here at Mostly Motorsports. We've got a good show lined up for you today. We've got a four-time USMTS champion, Rodney Sanders, is going to talk to us about his big win out there at the Wild West Shootout. He picked up an extra $10,000 by winning four of the six events out there last weekend. And we're also going to have two-time Chili Bowl Midget National winner, Rico Abreu. He's going to join us as well. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's been a lot of fun doing the show here this week. We've had a lot of great guests on, and we're going to continue to do that each and every day. And we hope that that you'll tune in each and every day, or at the very least, listen to the podcast. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcast, Apple, Spotify, you name it, we're on it. You can find Mostly Motorsports just about anywhere that you find your favorite podcast. And I want to thank Todd Surprise and Austin O'Neill for helping us produce the show here today. I was going to talk to Todd here real quick. Todd, I know you're in the middle of messing with something over there, but I'm going to interrupt you anyway. You and I were talking a little bit before we went on the air. You know, I'm kind of in a binge watch right now.
Yeah.
As I'm watching The Sopranos. You know, my girlfriend Deidre, she has never watched The Sopranos, and so we decided to get the box set.
Soprano Verd.
What did you tell me that it was 83 hours?
86 episodes. So
86 hours.
Yeah. So you're looking, you know, they're all between 45 minutes and an hour and 5 minutes on those shows. So yeah, you're looking at about 85 to 86 hours worth of programming.
I think Deidre and I are down to the final five or six episodes,
which is when
it really starts getting good. You know, when I watched The Sopranos originally, Todd, that second to last year wasn't very good.
No.
They just kind of went through the process.
They were winning a lot of awards, and I think they were kind of like,
let's just mail this one in.
We've got some episodes to make. We did, they cranked up the amount of episodes they were doing, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So that's the content, like me and you were talking about.
But I'm at the point right now where
it's good.
I don't know if you remember when Christopher and Tony flipped the Escalade down the embankment.
The big road trip.
And Christopher is gurgling blood. Right, I mean, he's dying right then.
But he probably will live.
And you're looking at Tony, and he's looking at Christopher, and he's thinking, you know, this guy's been kind of
he's been messed up.
He's a problem child, you know. He's got all these addiction problems. He made this movie that Tony didn't like because it portrayed him as a guy that cheated on his wife
and was kind of a
oof. And his wife wasn't real happy about
nobody
that.
Was
nobody was really happy about that one. So when they flip, Christopher's laying over there, he's gurgling this blood, and I look at Deidre and I said, wait till you watch what happens here.
It's just so hard
because you know he absolutely
loved this guy.
He loved Christopher. Yeah. Right, he wanted Christopher. At one point
he groomed him
to be the guy to
From the beginning. Even though he really wasn't his cousin, he was Carmela's cousin, and that's what you find out. So
he wasn't really blood related
to him, more to Carmela. But yeah, he groomed this kid. He was his number. He was going to be the guy to run the family, and he can't trust this guy
He's all smacked up.
And he confessed to him in the car about how he was doing drugs. He'd done drugs again.
And that's what he's saying there. He goes, don't let him drug test me.
I'll never pass. And that's when Tony realizes.
Tony goes, you know what?
Cut my losses.
It's time to put an end to this.
And
when he reached over.
Oh, my gosh.
And grabbed his nose, and you could hear him gurgling that
blood. And he opens his eyes and looks at Tony for a second.
Like, what are you doing, T?
It's terrible. It's a hard thing to watch.
It's the hardest thing maybe of the entire
series. Yeah, there's a couple of them
that I've watched.
When you watch it, there's a couple things that parts of the show during the years.
You know, the one that bothered me the most is when they shot Pussy out on the water.
Yeah,
and they threw him over, and they bagged him up, and they threw him over. Yeah. That one was pretty hard to watch because you know how much he meant to Tony.
Oh, yeah.
That was like his best friend. Yep.
There was some, and then when they killed the girlfriend, it was really tough too, and dragged her off into the woods.
When they killed that was.
It's just a different.
It was so shocking.
Yeah. The writing on the show, like I said, we're not trying to spoil anything because there's so many episodes. There's no way we could spend. There's a podcast that all they do, Scott, is talk Sopranos. The two actors.
Is it really?
It's called Talking Sopranos.
Really?
It's Christopher and the one married to Tony's sister. You know, the one who gets killed with the train hat on.
Richie.
No, not Richie. The big one. The big guy that wears the train hat.
Bobby. Yeah.
They have a podcast. It just finished.
It did.
Yeah. And it's called Talking Sopranos, and all it is
them talking about what goes
everything.
On behind the scenes and everything.
In front of it, explaining everything. It's a really good podcast.
Wow.
So if you're out there checking the Mostly Motorsports podcast, and you want a mafia podcast, we got one for you there too. So yeah. We'll let you get back on that.
That was horrifying to watch him just pinch his nose.
And to watch somebody that's never seen that.
And you know, there's a little bit of, you know, Tony's always dealing with depression, right? He's talking about how he's depressed all the time. And it turns out that his dad was that way.
Yeah,
his dad blacked out and passed out. He blacks out and passes out. And his son,
on the football field, AJ
passes out
on the first time that they bring him up as a leader. It's when they get brought to a leader is when they start feeling the pressure. And remember, AJ had the big sack in the game, and they brought that kid. He was a freshman. They brought him up in front of the whole team, and he passed out in front of the whole team.
But you know what's pretty disturbing about all of that is when AJ tries to do himself at the pool.
It's a
terrible episode, really, to watch.
The writing.
Because it really made me sad. You see Carmella, how upset she is.
We all have kids. Most of us have kids.
Yeah,
and it's just,
I shed a tear.
Oh, gosh.
When I
it's
see
a
that.
Hard. And like you said, the kudos to the writing. There's a reason why they got awards the way they did, because it's a damn good series, so
yeah, no doubt about it.
All right,
well, let's get right to it, man. We've got a great show lined up for you again. Let's bring in our first guest of the day. He's a four-time USMTS champion. Rodney Sanders joins us on the show. Rodney, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
Well, we're doing really good. Not near as good as you. You picked up four of those six wins out there in the West. Man, and that paid an extra $10,000. That's a pretty nice little bonus, isn't it?
Yeah, it was really nice. Kind of unexpected, to be honest with you, the way the first week started. So we knew we had some speed, just kind of didn't put everything together. And I guess everything kind of went our way the last few nights.
Yeah.
So that was really good.
Yeah. Just talk about those first two nights didn't really work out for you that well. How did you rally back and click off those four wins?
We just, you know, the first night kind of drew bad, and I actually spun out my own in the heat race, my own fault. And I came from B and got in and started to wave back, and I think got the fifth. And we were just kind of trying a bunch of stuff the first couple nights. And even the third night, we kind of changed some stuff, and we won the race, but knew we needed to be better. And we just kind of tweaked on it from there. And it just seemed like the car, the stuff we changed, it made it really balanced. And it just was, the car was really awesome the last few nights.
Yeah, was the track pretty consistent each night? Was it pretty much the same every night, or was it a little bit different as the week went on and the laps got on the racetrack?
It was a little bit different. I mean, it seemed like a couple nights were muddier than the next, and the last night was probably the slickest it was, other than maybe the first night. So we had to, you know, keep up with the track a little bit, but you know, our car, like I said, was pretty balanced, so we didn't have to make, you know, swing for the fences or anything, but I thought track prep did a good job. I mean, especially the mods. I mean, I thought it helped us that we ran last after the late models, so the track kind of dried out more. But kind of early in the night, the heat races kind of weren't much fun, but it made for good racing at the end of the night.
Yeah, Royal Jones has built a hell of a facility out there, Valdo Speedway. Talk about that facility. And, you know, you guys race at a lot of really nice venues around the country. You've been doing this for so many years. Kind of compare what Valdo is to the rest of the tracks that you run out there. It's a pretty nice place.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, you know, I think probably everyone knows, you know, Lucas Oil Speedway, I think, is, you know, just kind of a league of its own. But right. I feel like that one's probably, you know, second or third for sure. I mean, especially, you know, like the grandstand part and the suite area and the bathrooms are just, you know, super nice. So, you know, it's always fun going out there. You know, Royal's a great guy, helps me and a lot of people. So he's, you know, really great for the sport, you know, just somebody like that can help, you know, so many people and gives back.
I don't think people really realize how much Royal helps people. I mean, if you pay a lot of attention, you see Massey Valley Transportation on a lot of vehicles, a lot of cars. He does a lot helping people with fuel cost, beating up and down the road all over the place. It's hard to find people like Royal Jones, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, it's like you said, from sprint cars to late models to modifieds. I mean, he's just helped all different kinds of people. So, you know, it's for, you know, very fortunate to have somebody like that, you know, for our sport, you know. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. You know, winning these championships, you know, I was going back and I didn't realize that only 7 guys in 23 years have won the USMTS championship, and you've won 4 of them. How does that make you – that puts you in a rare category because nobody else has done that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think a few guys have, you know, won multiple or whatever. But, no, it's pretty crazy, honestly. Just, you know, when we started, you know, we were – you know, just happy to make the shows, and, you know, we didn't really have the money to go, and then, you know, we started running a little better, and then just kind of, you know, escalated from there. But it's kind of crazy to see, you know, now that I got 4, it doesn't really even seem right, you know, and I think we ran second or third a few other times that were close. So,
yeah,
it's just, you know, pretty awesome to be, you know, in a league with, you know, Chirock and Jason Hughes and some of them guys, you know, that when I grew up, that's who
right.
I was watching. So
right.
That's pretty cool to have my name on a list with some guys like that.
Yep. Last year, 4th in the points. Talk about last year, and you slipped down a couple notches there. Just talk about last season a little bit with the USMTS.
Yeah, we, you know, which they bumped up the money and everything, which was, you know, great. Less races, which we just kind of were off a little bit. You know, we won a couple races and, you know, ran second and third, you know, quite a few times, but we were just kind of missing a little bit. And we had more DNFs, I think, last year than we had 3 or 4 years combined. Mm. Just, you know, were in wrecks and just, you know, stupid stuff happening. So, yeah, we were just off and, you know, kind of trying to regroup this winter and just trying to, you know, figure out what we're missing and, you know, what we need to be better at.
Right.
Made some changes and, which, you know, it's awful early, but, you know, we had a good start in Arizona, but, you know, I know how that can change. You know, we might be good there, not good the next place, but we're just, you know, doing everything we can, trying to, you know, just make ourselves better and improve. So it's, you know, we're just trying to be better than last year, which
right.
Hopefully we can make some improvements.
You know, you talk about the competition and the people that run with USMTS, and the competition is amazing, right? I mean, if you ever been to, for the folks that are out there that are watching the show right now, if you've never been to a USMTS race, it is basically the world of outlaws of modified racing. And when you go there to race, you better have your stuff together, because if you don't, you're going to get waxed pretty quick. And it doesn't take much, does it, Rodney, to be off just a tick, and that gets you behind the eight ball just a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's always tough. You know, I feel like last year was even tougher, you know, with, you know, the money they're paying that, you know, some more guys started running and, you know, they changed their format up with the qualifying and everything. And, you know, they go out and qualify and then they invert 4. So it's kind of a, you know, catch 22, you want to be fast, but if you set quick time, then you're starting fourth in the heat, and then mm-hmm. they do pass the points from there. So it's still got to have a lot of luck, you know, but like you said, you got to be, if you're off a little bit, you're going to know it real quick. So it seems like anymore, I mean, you go to qualify and everybody's within a tenth or so, and that a lot of time could be front row or third row. So
it's really
tough, but you know, that's part of the reason I like it so much. Is, you know, it's always a challenge, and you know, it's just people are all the time seems like getting faster.
You know, USMTS has become really one of the best paying gigs out there. I was just checking it out today. 20 of the 43 races that are going to have this year are going to pay $10,000 win. They've got some $7,000 win races, $11,000 win show. They've got a $15,000 win race as well, and one $20,000 win race. That brings it. You see it more and more, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but you're starting to see some of the late model technology move over into the modified ranks just a little bit, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, which, you know, there's a lot of money, it seems like, in late model, you know, this year more than any, you know, than any other years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of them guys are getting cars or, you know, having a lot of input in helping people. And it's just like, he's a trickling down. So, you know, the late model world is so crazy on the technology side. And if you're, you know, don't run them all the time, or if you're, you know, sit out a little bit, it seems like you're behind. So the modified's kind of getting that way too. I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of nice that, you know, the mod's kind of more restricted on, you know, what you can and can't do. But still, I mean, a lot of that info trickles down, and it's just crazy to me to where everything's getting.
Right. Is that why you get over there and mess with the late model a little bit? I know out there in the West, you were running the late model. Do you do that so you can help yourself with the technology and trying to get it into the modified? Is that part of the process?
I mean, we kind of do it just, you know, I got a couple guys that, you know, help kind of, you know, get the car and the motor and stuff. And just trying to, you know, really like to go down that road, you know. It's just never really you know, materialized to have everything, all the, you know, everything we needed to do it. You know, we, you know, run here and there some, but it's so hard to compete at when we do that. But you know, it does, I feel like, help the mod a little bit. I mean, you know, we can learn a little bit of stuff, but I just feel like the more stuff I could get in, you know, as a driver, kind of helps me out. I mean, I know you kind of sometimes can pick up some bad habits from one or the other, but I think in the long run, it actually kind of helps you and keeps you sharp. And, you know, just the more stuff you can drive, I feel like the better you are.
Right, right. The key is trying to get all the power down on that little bitty tire on that modified, right? I mean, if you're in that late model, you got that bigger tire, you can be more aggressive with the gas, and you can romp on it a little bit more. But when you step back and you get back in that modified, you probably got to calm yourself down a little bit, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. It just seems like the mod, you got to be straighter all the time. I mean, even, you know, definitely when it's slick and, you know, that late model, you can be, you know, especially if there's a cushion or whatever. I mean, you can hook up everything you have. It's got 900 horsepower. It seems like you, mm-hmm. you can hook it up, especially early in the night. So, yeah, that mod, I feel like in a way it almost hurt me in, you know, some bad habits in late model. I drive it sometimes too straight compared to the mod, but, you know, it's, that mod's almost like driving a go-kart when it's slick.
Yeah, yeah. The amount of money that USMTS is paying to win the championship this year, is it $70,000, I think it is? Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. When a person rents for that kind of money, and you know that that much is on the line, does that put any added pressure on a guy like yourself? I mean, you've won all these championships and everything, but does it still kind of put a little pressure on you knowing that you're contending for $70,000 championship?
I mean, maybe a little bit. You know, it's you know, I just try not to really think about it too much. But,
right, right.
You know, it kind of goes into thing, and you look at, you know, tires or your brake pads or whatever. A lot of times you're like, I think I can go one more night. Well, you know, with that kind of money, we kind of just like, oh, you know what, we're going to just put new on, just, you know, because I feel like it's, you know, a lot of the top guys have new stuff all the time, and you have to. I mean, it's just for that much money. I mean, that could be, you know, $20,000-$30,000 swing from first to second if, right. You know, if something don't go right. So try not to think about it too much, but at the end of the day, we do try to maybe, you know, prepare just a, I mean, not that we don't try to prepare good for every race, but just make sure we got new stuff on, you know, kind of all the time.
Yeah, you can't take a chance on trying to be a little chintzy, trying to save a little bit of money on the brake pads when you know that you're going to need them, right? I mean, that's what it boils down to, right?
Right, yeah, for sure.
Hey, you know, we're in Kansas City, Missouri. That's where our home track's here, and I know that you're going to go to a couple of them, but Lakeside Speedway has been on the USMTS schedule for a long time. Talk about Lakeside Speedway. You know, we've got the Grant, the Youngins Memorial that we're going to run there, and then at the end of the year, they've got that the 8th annual Sizzler. Talk about Lakeside Speedway and that racetrack. Are you fond of that place?
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite tracks. I've had, you know, treated me good over the years, so I just like it because it's so wide and, you know, it's, which is really fast, but I just like a lot of times, it's, you know, it, you get to bottom or a top and you got room to race. So anywhere we go that, you know, that you're not, you know, you can kind of move all over the racetrack and have a lot of room. I like places like that. So that's one of them places. And, you know, it's always kind of got to be up on the wheel. And I just kind of, I like that place.
Right. Have you had a chance to see any video of I-70 Speedway, the new I-70 Speedway? They've got the inaugural Bushwhacker going to take place there this year. That place is a pretty giddy-up joint as well. Have you taken a chance to look at any video for that place?
I've actually seen some, you know, watch some asphalt races there years ago. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it with dirt on it or anything like that. So heard from a lot of people it's a really fast place as well. So kind of looking forward to that. I mean, I just assume rather go to a bigger track than a smaller track, it seems like. So we're looking forward to that. I think that should be an exciting event for sure.
Yeah. I raced at I-70 Speedway. I was there on opening day in 1969. I'm kind of showing my age there a little bit. My dad owned a Dodge dealership, and he supplied the pace cars there for the first couple of years that racetrack was open. And I had I won quite a few races out there in my day, but it's not the same place as it once was. You know, I mean, they tore the old place down, and they made and there was a lot of people that were saying that the old racetrack, if they put dirt on it, it was going to be too fast. But to be honest with you, I think it's just as fast now as it was when it had the old configuration of the racetrack. So, and you mentioned something about not wanting to run on maybe those shorter tracks. Is that because it just tears up equipment too much?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I just seem like, I don't know if it's my driving style or, you know, just some stuff we got, set up stuff, but it seems like we struggle more on somewhere like Dallas County or, you know, somewhere small like that. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like, you know, a lot of times that, and if you have a bad heat race or whatever, you get buried, it's really hard to make that up. Where it seems like, you know, which some of the big tracks do get spread out, but like somewhere like Lakeside, it's a big track. But man, I've seen, you know, a lot of guys come from deep in the field and run good at places like that. So it's just kind of a, you know, something I like. I know everyone kind of has a, you know, their own opinion or whatever, but I know it's definitely better for the bigger tracks for me.
Do the USMTS guys prefer a track that's kind of hammered down, or do they like it when it's got a top and a bottom and slick in the middle a little bit? Is that the preference?
Yeah, I think most of the guys really like, you know, the drier it gets. I mean, even like you said, I've had little top and bottom and slick in the middle, or, you know, or even just when it gets slick. I mean, I think some of the guys like it when it's heavy, but I think, you know, majority of them, you know, like it, you know, as the track slows down and, you know, then you're setups come more into play and, you know, I guess driver a little bit. So that's kind of, you know, I think most of the guys like it more slick.
You know, I'm going to say it. You don't have to comment on it, but I'll just say it. The guys that like it locked down, hammered down, are the guys that don't have the skill set that maybe a Rodney Sanders has. Just saying.
I don't know for sure about all that, but it just seems like, you know, when it's muddy, it seems like a lot of times everyone's fast. So I just kind of like it when, you know, it slows down and, you know, you got to And I personally, I like it, you know, kind of like the one night at Vado, like you said, when it was slick in the middle and had the top and a bottom, and you got to kind of, you know, run maybe the top in one corner and the bottom in the next and kind of search around. I kind of makes it more challenging, so I kind of like it like that.
Right, right. Another racetrack that we're really fond of here, and they've changed ownership now. Johnny Allen's going to go in there. I know you know who Johnny Allen is. He's a good guy. A hell of a racer back in his day. They've taken over Humboldt Speedway, and they're going to have the King of America number 11 there. Talk about Humboldt Speedway and what that race means. That's a that race is a heck of a way to start off the season. I know you raced down to Texas first before that, but then you come up to Humboldt. Talk about Humboldt Speedway just a little bit for us.
Yeah, that's you know, a place we've been going for lots of years. You know, we always like going there. Always like the Whitworth people. You know, they're great people too. So
great people.
It was we kind of struggled there the last little while, but we got second I think last year at the King of America, which you know we've kind of been that's the best run we've had there in a little while. But I'm sure John and them would do a great job. You know, like I feel like a lot of times like a person that's raced before, you know, really helps him being a promoter because you know he kind of knows what everybody likes and what he you know. Right. Just seems like kind of good on that aspect of it, but yeah, we're looking forward to that. Just hopefully we can have a good run, and yeah, the only bad thing is sometimes it gets really cold up there. But
right, it can't get cold.
We'll see for sure.
That's March 24th and through the 26th, so yeah, it could still get a little cold during that time. If there was a one racetrack on the USMTS National Championship schedule, what track would you consider your favorite out of all the tracks that you go to? Can you narrow it down to one?
I mean, I'm going to probably say Lakeside. I mean, it used to be I-80 at in Nebraska, but
right.
You know, we didn't go there last year. We're not going there this year, but I do like Lakeside. I mean, I think that is probably, you know, about my favorite one on the schedule.
That's great, man. That's good to hear. You know, I don't think there's good news for I-80 up there in Greenwood, Nebraska. From what my conversations with Joe Kosiski is, they're about ready to sell that place, and it's not going to be a racetrack in the future. And that's going to be a huge loss to everybody in motorsports, I think.
Yeah, that's a big bummer. I always, you know, look forward going there, and you know, it's just kind of like Lakeside. It's wide and fast and can move all over the place, so that's definitely a bummer. I mean, I understand them guys got to do what they got to do, but you know, definitely a bummer, you know, that we're not gonna get to go out there anymore.
Yeah, you know, Joe was telling me that, you know, he's getting up there in the years and that, you know, he wants to go out and enjoy life a little bit with his family and everything. And as you know, being a promoter of a racetrack, it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of work, and it takes you away from your family. It, just like a driver yourself, it takes you away from your family and your friends and the people that you want to hang around with back home because you're committed to doing what you do out on the USMTS National Tour.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, I know, you know, a lot of the great promoters, I mean, they're, you know, it's a, seems like about like a 24/7 job, especially, you know, during race time. So there's, you know, a lot of work in that that I know. So, you know, yeah, it's, like I said, that's definitely a bummer. But, you know, I understand. I mean, I guess I don't blame them one bit for wanting to, you know, spend time with family and kind of do what he wants to do. So, you know, don't blame him at all. But definitely it sucks for the racers for sure.
Yep. Are you going to hit any races before the national tour, the national championship schedule starts, or are you going to go run some other races before then?
We're actually in Las Vegas right now. We decided to come out here after last weekend, kind of had a talk over with the crew and decided to come out here. So they got a we practice tonight and race tomorrow, Friday and Saturday. And then I get married the 1st of February.
Oh.
So I thought we better come racing before that happens. So I don't really know what's going on the end of February. Got to see what's going on, but I didn't really see any races that stood out. So we'll probably just try to get everything ready and both cars ready and just regroup for the first USMTS race.
congratulations on getting married. How long have you been with your fiance?
We're going on about 3.5 years. So she's been ready to get married, and so I thought I better jump on board. And so now it should be really good. I'm excited for it. So I know she's been really excited and been doing all the planning, and I just told her I was just going to show up. So it's going to be in Minnesota, though. That's the only thing. I don't know. I'm getting a lot of crap from a lot of people that are got to go from Texas that about it, because they're going to freeze their butt off. But it should be good, and yeah, looking forward to it.
Where is Happy Texas? Where is that at?
It is south of Amarillo, about 30 miles, in between Amarillo and Lubbock, but closer to Amarillo.
Man, I remember going to Amarillo. I traveled with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour doing their broadcast for 13 years, and one of the craziest storms that ever hit me was in Amarillo, Texas. The weather can turn on you down there in a heartbeat, can't it?
Man, yeah, you're not lying. It could be, even this time of year, it could be snowing, get 8-10 inches of snow, and then 2 days later be 70 degrees.
Yeah,
it's just crazy. The wind always blows, it seems like, and but you know, summer times, I mean, like you said, it can be really bad with tornadoes and bad storms, but you know, it's there's a lot of fall and spring are always really nice out there a lot of times. So, but like you said, if you don't know what the weather is going to do, just wait a day or two, and it'll probably get a little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of crazy because, you know, one of my cameramen lives down in San Antonio, Texas, and it's been like a real winter down there lately. I mean, it's snow down in the 20-degree temperatures. It's just nuts what's happening in Texas, because you just don't see that kind of weather happen down there. When I was growing up, you didn't see that kind of weather down there, but it just seems like things are changing a little bit.
Yeah, I think the day we left to go to Votto, it was 9 degrees that morning.
And oh, my gosh.
It was, I mean, really, really cold. The wind was blowing, and, you know, we couldn't fill our hauler up with water because, you know, everything was going to freeze.
Yeah.
So we had to wait till we got out there to do that, but yeah, I think 2 days later it's 70 degrees, so
yeah.
It's just crazy with, you know, the weather and everything out there.
It can get pretty cold. I think that last day out there at Votto, it was pretty cold on that last day, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice out there during the day, but I mean, when the sun goes down, it's like a light switch. I mean, it gets cold in a hurry, so yeah, you'd be almost wearing shorts during the day, and
right. You
need a winter jacket at night.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Rodney, I appreciate you taking the time to join us, man. Congratulations on picking up all that cash out there. That's a good way to start off the season, right? So now you just need to build off that momentum and carry that through the rest of the USMTS championship season.
Yeah, it was definitely a good start. Like I said, I mean, I know it kind of can be up and down, so we're going to just take what we can get and try to, you know, just work hard and make sure we try to do the right things, and just try to make sure everything goes smooth, and looking forward to the rest of the year.
Yep. Well, thanks for taking the time here on Mostly Motorsports. We appreciate it. Good luck to you the rest of the season, and hopefully you can pick up that fifth championship.
All right. Thank you guys for having me on.
You betcha. All right. There you have it. Rodney Sanders, a four-time USMTS champion. Only guy to win four championships. Only seven people have won a champ. It just blows my mind up, right? Thinking about that. 23 years and only seven people have won the championship. It's crazy. It's unbelievable. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, a friend of ours, Rico Abreu, joins us next right here on Mostly Motorsports.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas fuel treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Rod End Supply is involved with a variety of motorsports as well as industrial applications with many different types of products. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively. Whether you're racing at the circle track or drag strip, rock climbing, or going off-road, Rod End Supply has an assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products to keep your equipment moving. Rod End Supply's experienced staff is ready and willing to help you with your needs. Their promise is to continue to provide a superior product with superior service so you can stay in front of the field no matter what it is. To learn more, go to rodendsupply.com.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive. Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Cigarport.ca is your go-to online store for exclusive cigars produced from the best quality tobacco in the world.
Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tea time today.
As your power steering pump ages, seal leaks may occur, causing the power steering system to lose fluid. Your power steering system may also develop an annoying squeal, and the steering may become more difficult to handle. By using Lucas Power Steering Stop Leak, you will stop the seal leaks, reduce slack in rack and pinion, eliminate the squeals and hard spots in your power steering system. It is guaranteed to stop seal leaks for your money back. Lucas Power Steering Stop Leak. It works.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. We're attempting to get a hold of Rico Abreu. Unfortunately, we're not able to get through to him right now, so hopefully we'll catch up with him here in just a little bit. You know, Mostly Motorsports is exactly what this show is all about, right? We just don't talk about motorsports all the time. We talk about a little bit of everything. And, you know, one of my favorite things to talk about is, I love sprint cars. Everybody knows that because I've traveled with the Lucas Oil ASES National Sprint Car Tour. And I was thrilled to see Blaycom pick up that championship last year. But one of my favorite things to do outside of motorsports is music. It's just the thing that I enjoy. Dare I say, I enjoy it as much as I enjoy racing. When I need to clear my mind, I talk music. And I like to talk music. Listen, our group of people, Todd Surprise, he can rail on a guitar. He's really good at it. And we've got Adam Bartling that comes in with us and works. He's got his own music studio as well. And but I think out of everybody, and I play the drums, I think out of everybody, Adam is the man, though.
Adam's, he runs his own recording studio here in town. And it's not just like a recording studio. It's actually, he has actual businesses and clients that come over, and he puts out albums and singles.
In fact, that music that we play on the bump, that's his music.
That's Adam's music. Bump music that you, a lot of the bump music that you hear on here, 90% of it's probably Adam's, and 10% of it's my cousin's band. Other than that, we use our own music here on Racing Boys, and we don't pirate it from the web or anything. We get our own bands to play it, and that's what we got. We were lucky to have Adam in our house. So
no doubt. He's been a huge asset to us. It was kind of funny how we met Adam, right?
Yeah.
Adam works for a cable company, and he came into our old studio to put cable in, and we started talking about, hey, man, yeah, I got a studio downstairs. And he goes, oh, really? And he said, I used to work as a board op at a radio station.
Right.
And so I take him downstairs. I show him what's going on down there. And I said, hey, you ever thought about maybe doing a little side work or something? And he goes, well, yeah, I do that.
That's what he does.
And that's exactly how we met Adam, wasn't it?
It's funny because he told me, you don't know how many people tell me when I show up at the job site, hey, I got a studio in the basement. That's where my stuff's set up at. If you can come down. And he goes, I'll go down there, and they'll have like a camera and a guitar, or a camera and a podcast, you know, whatever it may
be. Like a simple.
Yeah, and he said he went downstairs. He goes, there's a freaking studio in your basement. And he goes, a real studio. And he goes, you guys got a console from a radio station? I said, no, that console's the original console. And I said, yeah, it's a real station. So, yeah, Adam was... we impressed him as much as he impressed us. Let's just say that, because when he came in, he hears that line a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a studio in my basement.
Yeah, sure.
We all have a studio in our basement.
Yeah,
right?
Well, you know how podcast guys
That's
are.
Right.
They put them in a little corner,
That's
and they get
right.
a microphone, and they
and
set up
set.
Something
and
behind them.
And you got a mixer, and you go.
Yeah.
No, Adam was impressed with our setup.
But you know what? To be honest with you, let's just be really fair there, Todd. That studio was... a piece of crap compared to this.
Oh,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're back.
I mean, that was, listen, let me, I'll just say it.
We made do.
I am so embarrassed to tell you that our old studio, originally, when we decided we were going to do podcast and do our shows live in a studio, we were lucky enough that Sports Radio 810,
that's right.
where we've been for 24 years, had moved out of their location in Independence, Missouri. Kind of crappy part of town, little shaky.
Nice little neighborhood, though.
Nice little neighborhood. We had nice neighbors,
right? were nice.
and, you know, they moved out to Overland Park, the rich part of town.
That's right, the new part.
Excuse me. And so we decided we were going to move in there. And it was a little crummy. In fact, when we moved in there... Kirk Elliott, the building was completely piled up full of crap everywhere, right? Because yeah. they'd been using it for storage, and that place had been I don't know what he's doing there.
He's going to contact somebody. No, I know. Okay. It was full of stuff.
Yeah, it was so full. Kirk goes, I don't want any part of that. If you want to work in there, you can clean it up. And it took me... I got a big, giant dumpster.
I can't imagine.
And I cleaned on that thing for a month by myself. Nobody helped me. Not Kirk. He never came over there and helped me one time.
Because the only room that was left untouched was Boger's office. Once you moved all that stuff into that one front office.
What was funny about it, when we moved into that office over there, it looked like Chad had got up
and left
and walked out and just left everything there.
Let me tell you how much he did do that. So fast forward, we were in that studio for quite a while. Then one day I decided I had a little office off the studio in there. So I could, from my office, I could see through the windows
into
the studio. So I could, and I had a guitar and stuff in there. But one day I thought, you know, I'm going to move into the bigger office next to Scott's. And me and Scott would have an adjoining door. And,
right.
and all the stuff was in there, was some old stuff that was Boger's stuff. And so I went in there to move some stuff out, and I opened up that desk drawer, and there's a dollar and change in the desk, like literally stuff that he just pulled out of his pockets that morning and threw in his desk drawer and walked out with, man. It had been there, and it was gone, like he was there and then gone one day.
You know, I carried a $2 bill that I found in one of the drawers For years, I carried it because I thought that was going to be good luck for me, right?
That's your good luck dollar.
Well, because, you know, Chad had a lot of success.
Right.
I mean, you look at Sports Radio 810 WHB
now. The way
now,
it started?
Yeah, it's a 50,000-watt blowtorch. Yeah. It reaches six states and 44,000 square miles around the Midwest.
You can hear it everywhere.
You can hear it. You know, I've listened to Sports Radio 810 WHB in, what is it, Russellville, out in Kansas?
Almost to Colorado. That's right.
You can listen to it.
And at night.
I've listened to it in Tulsa.
For sure.
I've listened to it in Knoxville.
Yep.
I've listened to
Nebraska.
In Des Moines.
Yep.
Omaha. That thing just reaches out everywhere.
People have no idea how big a blow. It's so strong that they have to turn it down at night because it will overwhelm the other stations that get pumped up.
Right.
So like at the 9 o'clock hour, whatever it is, they have to crank down some of their wattage because it will reach out all the way. I mean, it's such a huge blowtorch, man. So I, yeah, like I said, unfortunately though, that building started getting some mold in it, and the race,
not just a little mold.
We did our best. We brought in,
you know, Todd. We really moved out of there because we were worried about you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And you know, I was going to have to tell you,
you've got some, you know, a little health issues.
Yeah, my asthma would not handle the mold much longer. I quit being in there.
That shit was starting to get in there, bud.
It was bad.
It was starting to get.
Well,
really
as
bad.
You know, our bathroom was the first place we noticed it. Because it was a white tile bathroom, it was always spotless in there. We kept it real clean. It wasn't like a junky bathroom, but it was like it was built for men to clean, right? The walls were made out of the same tile as the floor. You could go in and splash it down, clean it, perfect. Well, one day I went in there, and the back of the door had dots all over it. I was like, what the heck is that? And they were so small, I couldn't even tell what it was. And a couple weeks later, it was on the counter, and I was like,
oh, hey, boy.
Guys. And you had your drums in there. We had the refrigerator in there. We lived there. You played drums there a lot. You'd be there during the day.
I played it more there than I do here.
Most definitely. Yeah, I mean, I'd come by quite a bit. You'd be still playing, and I'd wait till you finish. But,
and you know what? We never did jam together.
No. We had,
Todd had his amp there and his guitar there. My drums were in that room, and we never played together.
I played guitar with David Grubnick, the Top Fuel dragster driver.
Oh, that's right.
He came when NHRA would bring their, because they were pretty good, and they bring all their people around.
You know, NHRA does as good a job as anybody getting their drivers out
there. They make sure
there.
They get.
In fact, when we were in our townhome over there.
That's right. Twice.
They brought him over there. John Force came there. Who else was with him?
Courtney was the last one at the old studio.
Right.
So she was the very last one. But John Force and Robert Hype both times came to our studio. No, Schumacher was the second guest.
Oh, yeah, Tony Schumacher came by there.
No, was it? Yeah, he drove for the...
Yeah, because I've got a picture of him in the studio when we're doing it.
That's right.
But what's so funny is...
we're in that little...
We built this studio in a little bitty bedroom. It wasn't real small, but it was small.
It was bigger than your average basement studio would be, because it had bigger closets and a bunch of closets.
It had a big walk-in closet, and Todd was always in the closet, because that's where we put all of our gear there, to where you'd operate the... And you were behind a curtain.
Behind the curtain. I was the man behind the
curtain. You were the man behind the curtain.
And between Primetime Live, which we used to Race Wars used to host a show every Friday and Saturday night called Primetime Live.
Right.
The first year, we tried to pull off 4 hours a night, two nights a week. And so between that, I was in that closet for 10 hours.
That's right.
10 hours a week in that in that closet. I told my wife, I said, we've got to get something better, because I'm in this closet for 10 hours a week now. Back when it was 2 hours, it was okay.
Yeah.
10 hours was starting to get to be. I was like, oh my gosh, this. I turned it into my room. You remember? I started bringing posters in.
Right. And, trying to make it look like something.
I had to have something to look at. I had things hanging from the ceiling, so it was a great studio, though. And like you said. Where we're at now, if you don't know, I mean, this is what we've designed here and is currently going on. This is always a work in progress.
Right.
This is
a real studio.
This is a real studio. Now, it's part of a house, but it would take a lot of work to get it back to a house. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Whereas most places, you could tear it down in a day and get it back to a house. This is not that case.
No. This is a real studio. We spent a lot of time on putting this together.
That's right.
I looked at a lot of houses before I chose this house, because I could just see the layout in here and how it was going to work, and it's turned out to be really good. Hey, Todd, let me ask you, You know, I think me and you talked about this here not long ago, and maybe we'll get Austin his opinion in it, because I think he listens to different kind of music than we do. But what band do you enjoy enough that – hold on, let me rephrase this question. How about what band do you like to listen to that you don't have a CD or some kind of recording of?
Yeah, that's so when I'm in my wife's car,
yeah,
I get turned on to different music sometimes.
Because she listens to different music.
And she listens
to
my stuff.
She's not a noodler.
Nah, but she'll listen to noodle. She very much appreciates.
How long will she listen to noodle?
Well, we went to... we've driven across the country noodling, so. but I do listen to a lot of stuff. Like you said, you wouldn't think that I would have a lot of stuff that I do actually have CDs for. So my music taste is like you. It's very broad all the way across the right. thing. But I do listen to a lot. My new thing now is, and like you with the Spotify, YouTube TV does this. YouTube does this as well. Right. They suggest bands for you. After you like this, you might like this. You like this, you might. This new band I've been following, Joyous Wolf.
Joyous Wolf.
Very blues rock. Riff oriented, just kind of like.
You haven't turned me on to that because you know I'm the blues guy.
I know, and this is within the last week and a half, I think.
Really?
I've been
where
like.
Where are they out of?
I don't know. That's how new I am to them.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I just followed their Facebook page this week. They dress old school,
yeah.
You know, and they kind of like said when they saw what's his name doing their thing. What's the band that kind of toyed off on Led Zeppelin?
Greta Van Fleet.
So when they saw that kind of like working.
Total ripoff of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, so when they saw that, they thought, well, we play really good music. Let's just kind of do that vibe. So they kind of dress that way, and they kind of, and it's a riff rock, blues riff rock type of bass music.
You know what I hate about Greta Van Fleet the most? Is the singer tries to act like Robert Plant.
And now,
his yeah. body language and
now
everything
doing,
and the way he does it. And then he wears these big old earrings that are feathers yeah. and whatnot. It's just too weird for
he's
me.
Even starting to go a little he's starting to do a little different. He's even I think he like listens to the social media and plays you get and does it even more like, oh, you don't like that, guess what? And because I don't know if you saw the latest video, oh my gosh, they're all in white dress.
I saw that. Oh my gosh, can you put enough white in a video?
So that was the thing in the eight, like for you kids who don't know that MTV actually used to play music videos back in the day. The people
right.
that listened to this show probably knew that back in the day. But in the 80s, producers went with the white look about 84, 85, 86.
When MTV started.
That's right. And so these music, instead of just shooting a live video, right, of a band jamming, they'd pump in everything white. They'd dress them up in white and white background and oversaturate, and that's what this band looked like. They said, hey, we like that, look, let's do that. And then they went to it to the umpteenth degree, but everything's white in that video.
It's so blown out in white.
It hurts your eyes a little
whoever approved that at the record company should be fired.
Yeah, I don't know how that stuff works. I'm pretty sure music videos are made by the cost of the performer now, so that pretty much tells you what you need to know.
Yeah,
right, like they approved it. Like
yeah.
he approved it, so it was good to go. But I there's some bands out there, man, right now that are really what I'm a little saddened to hear. I had tickets to see Steve Vai play here in March, and
at
he's
the Uptown.
Yes, he's had to cancel his tour till November.
Why is that?
He had hand surgery, back tendon surgery in his arm or wrist or something earlier, and after it got healed, he recorded a whole album with his newly repaired hand and got the whole album. Well, as he was preparing for the tour, he injured his hand in another way. Because
is he the best guitar player on the planet?
Best rock, improv. You know, this guy can do it. What's different about him is he's a guy that can set on paper and write notes on paper and then play it on the guitar like a composer.
Right.
Whereas I play something and somebody say, here's your notes that you're playing.
So
right?
I can't read that.
But he can sit down and with a piece of paper with staff notes and put notes on paper and go back and play that, which is that's a different level. That's just not a guitarist. That's a composer. And,
right.
and Adam's kind of like that in a way, not as far as composing, but
right.
Adam, when he hears something in his head, he lays down the bass line. He goes back, plays the drums, goes back, lays his audio down. I mean, that's the same thing. Whereas I'm a guitar player and a bass player. I can lay down some guitars and some bass
and a little
work.
Bass, right, yeah.
And some keyboard. I can throw down some keyboard to make. But there's no way I can do the drums. It just doesn't. It's a syncopated thing. Same way with piano, actual piano. I can play keyboard. I can't play piano. That's two different things.
I've never tried to play the piano. I don't think I could get. I can get my brain to connect with my fingers.
Yeah, my son had the ability, and its key is early development before your brain has a chance to develop to the what it's going to become. Right.
Right. Right.
The left right. Part of the brain is a whole different thing. I can play some simple piano licks, but separating it to where you're doing two different things, I don't even know how drummers do that. So let alone transferring that to.
It's funny, you would think that because I could play the drums, yeah. I could probably play the piano.
Well, that's what everybody said, but it doesn't work that way. That's what a lot of people say. I've heard a lot of drummers say, man, I wish I could transpose this to drums because I can't.
Right.
But Adam's one of those guys, like, I don't know if you ever seen a professional keyboard. They have drum machines built into the keyboard. So you play a note on the keypad.
Yep.
And that'll play a drum sound. Adam's one of the old, they've been on every keyboard, even kids' keyboards, they've got drum machines built onto them. I've never seen a guy actually play a song on the keyboards as well as Adam. He can play with his fingers and keep a drum beat and fills on the keyboard.
Crazy.
It's amazing stuff. So like you said, these musicians out there.
You've been over to the studio and recorded a little bit, haven't you?
Two times, yeah.
Did he use some of your stuff?
I've got it. He asked me if I... So what we're doing, we're working on something. It's tough to play. The way I grew up playing was, even with the four-track recorder, it was push, red lights on, you guys go. And then you record everything, and then you can come back and add some stuff. The way they do it now, everything's individually tracked. So if you're not good enough to keep time, you're going to have a hard time recording with someone like Adam. Now, there's different people that record, like Dave Grohl.
He's a pocket player.
Yeah. Now, Dave Grohl with his band, they went in and played a lot of stuff live, right?
You know, I was watching the show about the studio that was in Venice Beach, California.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when Dave started playing with Nirvana in that studio, they made him play to a click
track.
Yeah,
because he said
it was like when they asked him to play,
stabbed him in the heart.
It's like it ripped his heart out.
People don't realize
how hard
drumming is for a full song. Now, when you're playing live in a concert, things are different, man. It's a groove based thing. The energy's live.
Right.
Even when there's nobody in the crowd, you know what? I think we got Rico. So let me put it on hold.
All right, let's get him. All right, it looks like Rico is going to be checking in with us here, and we'll get him up here on the phone here real quickly. And Todd's talking to him now, so we'll get right to him. So, all right, let's go to him now, a friend of the Racing Boys, Rico Abreu. How you doing, Rico?
Good, man. I caught you at the right time, it sounds like.
Hey, you did, man. We were just shooting the bull about some music. You know, the show is about mostly motorsports, you know. We talk about we talk about everything, not just motorsports, but we talk. What are you jamming to right now? What kind of music are you listening to, Rico?
I'm into just some country rock, newer country. I don't know, a little bit of everything.
Yeah you know, it's like us, we have a wide variety of music that I like. I'm kind of a country rock blues kind of guy. That's kind of what I like to
listen to. Me too.
Yeah no doubt. Rico, let's talk about the Chili Bowl, man. You know, there was a time there that it looked like your car had enough speed to get up there and challenge for the win. Did you feel like that at some point during the race, that you had enough speed to get up there and challenge for the win?
Yeah, I just, you know, as the race went on, I felt like I was getting better and better. So it's just, you'll have those years. And we were able to, get a podium finish. I thought I was pretty solid right at the end of the race, last 10 laps. And that's all you can ask for these days. These races are tough to win. So as long as you, for me, it's keep positioning myself every year to be in the hunt at the end of the race. You're bound to win another one.
Right. You know, I always say this to everybody. in order to win, you have to put yourself into position to win the race, right? You got to be up at the front. You got to take advantage of maybe somebody else's bad luck along the way, somebody bouncing off that big old cushion they had down there this year. That cushion was pretty gnarly this year, wasn't it, bud?
Yeah, it was. It gets up there slick right on the wall. You know, and you got to just be cautious at the end of the race up there. You know, you see guys running kind of a diamond line or a slide job line mm-hmm. to keep their speed up where they don't have to commit to the cushion. And then you see guys running up there on the wall, and then you see guys right down on the bottom. So yeah. I was running kind of a diamond line in one and two, and it's because the pace gets so slow getting into one where you can kind of just cheat the corner and exit nice and slow and lean up to the cushion slowly. Right. But it was tricky this year, and you've seen some mistakes at the end of the race where Bell got into the fence and Larson tripped off of four and Colfoy tripped off of turn two, and you know, and you're able to hunt those guys back down and pass them. So
right.
That's the Chili Bowl, man. That's why it makes that A main so difficult, and when you win it, you're the guy that made the least amount of mistakes. That's why you won.
Right. You know, I saw a lot of guys when they try to cheat it in, and you're exceptional at doing it, right? I mean, you know how to get it done. But some of the guys, when they tried to cheat the corner, they'd hit it just a little too much and throw the front end on them.
Yeah, that cushion will get you, you know. So just because in, you know, racing – there at the Chili Bowl, you really lead off of your right rear, so you're able to you know, easily trip the front and the nose, and you towards the end of the race you're letting your front shocks out and getting some more rear grip or getting everything you can, and that'll even make that front end that much lighter to be able to trip over there. So you got to be easy up there, you know, and just hit your marks.
Yeah. You know, I can't get my head around, because you're making such fast laps around that little fifth-mile racetrack, that you're able to reach down and make adjustments on your shocks and whatnot. Where at do you do that when you're in during the race and you're up to speed? Do you make those adjustments under the yellow, or can you do it when you're racing?
You can do a little bit of both. You know, it's tough to touch the fronts when you're racing, but you know, the right rear is down below your right hand. So, you know, naturally your left hand is the dominant hand when you're racing midgets at the Chili Bowl. But it's, you know, so you can reach down and tie your right rear down and give it a little bit more grip over the right rear corner. So, but under caution is for me, you know, the easiest, you know, time to adjust on the shocks, and then you get a little bit of time to think about it.
Right.
Know which direction to turn them, but it's pretty basic, you know, when it comes to shock adjusters for me, and I don't really like to touch them too much, but at the end of these races, especially 55 laps, you burn a lot of fuel off.
Right.
The back of the car gets up, you know, you're fighting that fuel load, and then the track conditions are obviously a lot slicker and slower, so you're trying to mechanically project the car getting in the corner just when the pace slows down like it did, so you're using your shocks as a tool to, you know, to get that car's attitude right. And, you know, it can get technical and tricky at times with those shocks, and you can out-tune yourself pretty quickly.
Yeah, man. How about your qualifying night, man? What a job you did on that qualifying night. You know, you've won your qualifying night seven times, man. That's unbelievable. You think about it, it's hard to get your head around somebody doing that many times.
Yeah, it you know, it all comes down to Keith Coons and how fast his cars are, and every year he gives me great race cars. You know, when we go to the Chili Bowl, and I have confidence going in, we're going to be fast, and we're able to you know, have that same feel every year when I unload that I'm going to be good enough to win the race.
Yeah. Yep. The Chili Bowl is really important to everybody, right? Everybody wants to win it. Everybody wants the driller, right? But for you in your racing career, what is the most important thing? Is it the Chili Bowl, or is it what you do throughout the racing season?
You know, it's a little bit of everything. You know, just the Chili Bowl for me is yes, it's, you know, one of our biggest events we go to mm-hmm. throughout the year. You know, and it is, you know, it is about winning that driller and bringing that thing home. And, you know, and for me as well is the interaction with the fans and building, you know, that fan base, you know, and presenting that merchandise and, you know, and then competing for with, you know, great partners for 2 years in a row now, say, or, you know, Rowdy Energy and Pit Pay on board of my car was, I was able to, you know, bring that into, you know, victory lane for them and for them to experience winning is what it's all about. Right. You know, and those, and maintaining those partners and keeping them, you know, at the top of our sport where it's, you know, winning and getting them into victory lane and people supporting, getting people to support these companies that are supporting racing is most important.
Right. No doubt. You know, you sit here and you look at the kids that are coming up through the ranks right now, right? They start out at five or six, they're in junior, they're junior sprints. They're running down there at the shootout. But for you as a racer, you were kind of a late bloomer. I think you started racing shifter carts, what, at 15, right?
I started 16 years old racing go karts, and then, you know, moved up into a sprint car when I was 18. And, you know, there's 2011 there, and then I was able to start racing sprint cars and midgets. Sprint cars with the Cadings family and then midgets with Keith Coons in the same season. So I was going back and forth racing, and it was, you know, that's what, you know, raised that success so quickly through my career is the seat time I was getting and the different circumstances I was experiencing at races and flying all over the country getting a race with some of the best people in the business was, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, there's always this debate, right? Is the Belleville Midget Nationals bigger than the Chili Bowl Midget Nationals? I think the Chili Bowl's got to be bigger than Belleville, isn't it? Oh, did we lose him?
You know, those are the big events. That's everything. I mean,
right.
Getting to compete at those and win them and be a part of, you know, great success with Keith Coons Motorsports and, you know, just being there is, you know, we're humbled and lucky to be able to experience those moments. And that's what, you know, stuff you never forget.
Yeah. Rico, what are you going to be doing this year? What's your schedule for you as far as sprint car driving? What are you going to be doing this year?
I got about 65 sprint car races scheduled, and that's kind of all. I mean, I want to race with the World of Outlaws, the best guys, and be able to, you know, win more World of Outlaw races.
Yeah. When it comes to the World of Outlaws, it's the best of the best. I love what you did with Jack in as a team owner last year. That was pretty special, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jack's one of my heroes, man. He needed to go out with a bang, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. But we were all pulling for him up there at Knoxville to make it into the A-Main. But
he was close making it.
He was really close, man. It was fantastic to watch him. Rico, we appreciate you taking the time to join us, man.
Thank you.
I so appreciate it. Thanks for joining us on the show. We'll talk to you down the road, and good luck, and go out and win some World of Outlaw races this year, okay?
Thank you, bud. Take care.
All right. There you have it, Rico Abreu. We appreciate him taking the time to join us here on the show. He got a third-place finish. He put himself in a position to try to win that Chili Bowl this year, but unfortunately he got a podium finish. And I believe that Rico is going to win 3 or 4 Chili Bowls before it's all said and done. The guy is a tremendous talent. I mean, you just got to go back and look at what he has done. He won the 2015 and 16 Chili Bowl. He won the 2015 Pepsi Nationals. He's 2014 USAC National Midget Series champion. He won the 2014 Belleville Midget Nationals champion, and he was the 2012 USAC National Midget Series Rookie of the Year. Just think about that. The guy didn't even start racing until he was 15, 16 years old. And look at all the accomplishments that he has had over the years. It's really, really unbelievable what he has accomplished for a guy that didn't start until he was 16. You know, back when I started racing, you couldn't even race until you were 16 years old, right? But in today's world, it's so much different than it is back in the day. These kids are starting at 5 or 6 years old, and it's really unbelievable what some of the drivers like a Buddy Kofoit, you look at what Kyle Larson has done behind the wheel. He's still a young guy. He's not as young as he once was. I remember the first time I saw Kyle Larson race. It was at Cottage Grove, and we were running with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour. I think it was 09, 2010, something like that. He was about 15, 16 years old. And I went over to his dad, and I said, hey, listen, I'd like to do an interview with Kyle. He said, well, he's in there sleeping, but let me go in there and wake him up because he needs to get his ass up anyway. And so he went in there and brought him out, and he was all sleepy-faced and did an interview with me. And that was my first memory. I remember telling Lee Spencer, there was a time when nobody knew who Kyle Larson was, right?
I remember that.
You remember that?
I do.
And we were sitting in our little studio out at Kansas Speedway.
Right.
We had a nice little studio out there. And we were talking to Lee, and I said, here's a guy you're going to have to keep an eye on. She says, who's that? I said, Kyle Larson. Who's he? She had no idea who he was.
I remember that like we were.
Like it was crazy.
It was.
Wasn't it?
And yeah. It's funny that you say that because when she immediately, like, it wasn't one of those things like she took it and passed and just threw it away as a. She stored that in her memory, and she remembers that to this day, too. You know, she still remembers.
First time she ever heard about him.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that he was young, too, when you did that interview. I went back and watched part of that interview. He was a little kid, man.
Oh, no. Well,
I saw a photo, I think, is what I saw of that. And he's a little kid.
Yeah, that was a long, long time ago, man. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to be a little sad not traveling with the Lucas Oil ASCS National Sprint Car Tour this year. You know, that's...
I'm sure.
You know, my friends are right here in this room right now. But when I'm at home, I don't really hang out with a lot of people, right? But when I'm out on the road, you know, I hang out with my racing family. And
that's your merry men, a group of guys.
Man, I mean, there's a lot of people I'm really going to miss this year. It's not going to be easy to sit here in this studio and watch the races on TV every week.
It'll be a culture shock for you for a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like you said, when you're up and down the road like that, my dad, he traveled construction, and it wasn't like a truck driver where you're in a different town every day. He would be in a different city for 6-7 months and then another one for 6 or 7. When he got done, he said that was the hardest thing he could do was...
Well, when you're used to traveling for a living...
Yep. You're just set in one spot. He said, man, it's weird to be stuck in... And then that becomes your normal so much, you know, where you're just stuck in one spot. But
yeah. Hey, let me ask Austin something. Austin, how's your car coming, bud? You coming along pretty good?
It's coming along good. I took 2 weeks off from it. I haven't been in the shop since I left for the Chili Bowl.
Sometimes you got to relieve your brain from the race car.
Yeah.
Once in a while, right?
I got to the point where I don't have a whole lot to do, but, you know, we're getting really close on it. Suspension's in it, body's on it. I got to go down and get all that stuff painted.
We need to get you another motor.
Yeah, we need that.
Racing Boys ain't going to buy it, though. I'm just going to
We probably could figure out a plan for it, but.
No, you can't, no, because there's no plans for Racing Boys to buy it. You know, we buy fire suits. That's what we do.
Yep, and I'm grateful for the one I have now. I wore that one for a couple of years, and it was blue, and I had a white car that didn't really match, and I got a black one, so it looks really good. So
right. So you've got both cars rolling, do you?
No, I just got the primary car right
now.
You've
got to get a rear end for the other one, don't you?
Yeah, but my goal was get one car done, and then once that's done, you know, shift your focus on the backup car. So
right.
We'll probably start running around. I don't know, mid-April. I'm still waiting on a couple schedules to come out, but we'll see what takes place in the next couple weeks.
Maybe we can find you a sponsor to help you out a little bit. That would be nice.
That'd be awesome.
So if you guys want to get a hold of Austin, they could get a hold of you, what's your email address? Austin@racingboys.com. Can they do that?
You can use that one. You can use my racing one, which is carneyrocket@gmail.
Carney Rocket.
Yeah. And then
I'm just saying, man, there was only Rocket. And it was Jesse Hockett.
Yeah.
He's the real Rocket.
Or you can reach out to my racing page. I respond to all my messages, so.
All right.
Pretty okay. Savvy with social media, so.
No, you're pretty good at it, buddy. Thank you, bud. Appreciate it. Hopefully we can help Austin out. He finished second in the Racing Boys ASCS Warrior Region points this year. And hopefully he can pick up some wins this year for Racing Boys. We hope he does, man. He's a talented driver. He's got a lot of ability. And he just needs a little help along the way. That's all. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the show. We appreciate it. We're going to do it all over again tomorrow. We're going to do it every day, Monday through Friday. Starts at 12 o'clock. We hope that you'll join us right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil. You know, made in America, sold to the world. They're the best. So we want to thank everybody again for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports.
CigarPort.ca is your go-to online store for exclusive cigars produced from the best quality tobacco in the world.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
Rod End Supply is involved with a variety of motorsports as well as industrial applications with many different types of products. Since 1989, Rod End Supply has provided superior products priced competitively. Whether you're racing at the circle track or drag strip, rock climbing, or going off-road, Rod End Supply has an assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products to keep your equipment moving. Rod End Supply's experienced staff is ready and willing to help you with your needs. Their promise is to continue to provide a superior product with superior service so you can stay in front of the field no matter what it is. To learn more, go to rodendsupply.com.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Missouri's must play.
Whole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix.
It works.